You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Rangers win the World Series. It is Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, ESPNU as well. The Rangers 5-0 victory over the Arizona Diamondbacks last night. They win the World Series 4-1, 11-0 on the road this postseason. CC, what were they, 40-41 in the regular season?
40-41 on the road in the regular season.
And yet 11-0. Yeah. There's no logic behind that whatsoever. There's no indication that that could happen. There's no hint that that could happen. That just completely comes out of absolute nowhere that something like that can happen. And it's not like, hey, this is like historically a great road team. This team lost over 100 games 2 years ago.
Yes. Yeah.
They took a risk this offseason. They decided, you know what, let's start our managerial search with a no. Let's call somebody out of the blue who we know could be great. And they call Bruce Bochy. He says yes. He manages them to a World Series, his fourth World Series title, his second team he's won World Series with, Giants of course the other one. He's been to the World Series with three different teams. He starts a pitcher in Nathan Eovaldi yesterday that does a great job, by the way, countering a no-hitter through six by Gallen of the Diamondbacks. Mm-hmm. Eovaldi this postseason, 5-0, 2.95 ERA in potential closeout games in his career, 1.03 ERA. Corey Seager wins his second MVP, 1-1 with the Dodgers, now with the Rangers. What a story, Smalls, this Texas Rangers team has become.
Absolutely. But isn't this what we love about postseason baseball? That weird things happen that you don't expect the Texas Rangers to go an unprecedented 11-0 on the road. You don't expect a Texas Rangers team without Adolis Garcia, without Max Scherzer being at full speed. Like, all of these things should not lead to a World Series championship, yet they always find a way. And it's a good thing to change your fortunes when you lose 102 games 2 years ago by spending a fortune and $500 million in the offseason. So I think we'll see, at least I hope we see, more clubs take that aggressive approach when it comes to spending.
Yeah, and that's why you got to give credit to ownership. And Ev was asking the question, or Pat was asking the question, excuse me, why do we give the owner the trophy when they have nothing to do with it? Well, the owners of the Rangers had plenty to do with this team winning a World Series, because not only their investment in the team in terms of overall payroll, some of that wasn't a good return on investment when you think about Jacob deGrom and the salary they took on with Scherzer, but you also think about them having the, I guess, conviction about going out and getting an old-school throwback manager like Bruce Bochy,
yes,
somebody that's done it, had success at multiple stops in Major League Baseball, having him step into the clubhouse that you currently had with some young veteran players and actually go on this magic carpet ride. So credit to them. This was one of the most closely contested divisions in all of baseball, the AL West. The fact that they were able to make it through that gauntlet and then go through on the postseason run that they had, it's damn impressive, and that's why you have to give all the credit in the world to Bruce Bochy for being able to guide this team and lead this team. Corey Seager as well, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're probably talking about one of the greatest postseasons any shortstop has ever put together. That's the kind of postseason that Corey Seager had. It's Derek Jeter-esque with a little more slug. So damn impressive what Corey Seager was able to do on the field and leading this lineup.
No question about it. And they were good up the middle, and they were also, like, if you look at this team, you have to also wonder, could they have even been better? Imagine if Jacob deGrom was healthy. Imagine if Max Scherzer, who they got from the Mets, was a full version of his old self.
Exactly.
Now, maybe other things would change, right? Maybe they don't go out and get this guy or that guy, whatever it may be, if those guys are in there. But it is an amazing thing to think that this team actually had more on their roster than they actually displayed because of injury.
Yeah, but not every team can do that. I mean, look at the Mets. They were able to acquire a bunch of stars, and sometimes it doesn't all click together, which is why I think
highest payroll in baseball. They didn't make the playoffs.
Exactly. But that's why I think when we're talking today, of course, we want to give all the credit in the world to the players for finding a way to get it done. But to me, all roads lead to the manager. All roads lead to the coaching staff. Because just because you spend the money and acquire the stars does not mean that you're going to get them to produce. And especially with having so many key pieces removed from the equation. I think Bruce Bochy did an amazing job handling this team. I think Mike Maddux did an exceptional job extracting the best from this pitching staff. He has such a deft hand when it comes to deploying the pitching staff. And I hope that baseball is taking notice, that it's the Bruce Bochys of the world. It's the Dusty Bakers of the world. Let baseball people be managers. Let managers manage. And I know that that requires the front office taking a bit of control off of their plates, which we've seen become such a pervasive issue in baseball, where the numbers matter, the stats matter, the contracts matter. But I hope that baseball realizes that you do have some really smart baseball people out there, and you should let them do their job.
Well, that actually goes back to the ownership thing, like that, you know, we keep coming back to here. Ownership in Texas hires Chris Young, former Major League Baseball player, to be their general manager, and he hires somebody to run the baseball team. And that's how a structure works. Like, for example, if we're going to use the Yankees that people get worked up about, in that the assumption, I don't know what's true or not, I don't work for the organization, but the assumption is Brian Cashman, their general manager, wants to run day-to-day operations and wants to, in essence, manage the team from afar, and Aaron Boone is there doing it, but Brian Cashman's really the manager. And when I bring up ownership, at some point, ownership should just say to Brian Cashman, put a uniform on. Go ahead. You manage the team. You want to manage the team? Manage the damn team. You've been here long enough. We trust you. Manage the team. And I think he obviously would fight that. No, I'm not the manager. Okay, so then don't be the manager, right? In this specific case, you have a guy like Bruce Bochy who is the manager. And I think the people above him recognizing, do your job and do it the way in which you've done it in San Francisco and San Diego, clearly worked here. Clearly worked, and it worked in a huge capacity. Now, though, the Rangers are off the list of teams that we have in sports that have never won a championship. Okay, so if you look across the NBA, NFL, NHL, and Major League Baseball, there are 30-plus teams who have never won a championship. Rangers, no longer one of them. If I said to both of you right now, you have to pick one, you have to bet a dollar, ESPN bet style, on one of them to win a championship next, who would you bet on?
Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, they have a top-10 scoring offense, top-10 scoring defense. Their defense is tops in takeaways. And they got a guy in Trevor Lawrence who is one of the six or seven best quarterbacks in all of football. So I think they have all the ingredients to win a championship. And on top of that, they have a head coach in Doug Peterson that's already done that. So if we're trying to pick franchises that have never won a title to win one in the next calendar year, the Jacksonville Jaguars would be my pick.
I'm going with the Cincinnati Bengals. Joe Burrow said the window to win is his entire career. Ooh. I don't think it's a matter of if they win a Super Bowl. I think it's when. So give me my money, and I'm putting him on the Cincinnati Bengals.
Both great picks. I would have taken both of them if I had a chance to go first here on this. I'm going to use CC's logic towards another sport. Championship caliber coach, franchise quarterback, so to speak, right? Phoenix Suns. Frank Vogel won a title with the Los Angeles Lakers. Their franchise quarterback, of course, basketball, is Kevin Durant.
Right.
They also have Devin Booker. We have no idea what Bradley Beal is going to be. They have an interesting roster of younger athletic guys around them that are not star players. But if I told you right now the Phoenix Suns won a championship, their first ever in franchise history, you're not going to sit here and be like, I can't believe that. That comes out of nowhere because Kevin Durant is there. Yes, he's older, obviously, than he was when he won the first few championships, and he's towards the back end of his career. But if I told you Steph Curry won a championship, you'd believe it. If I told you LeBron James won a championship, who's older than all these guys with the way he's playing, you'd believe it. So I'll go Phoenix Suns. But there are a lot of teams out there that would certainly be in this conversation for potential first-time title winners. We want to talk to you guys on this. Be a part of the Unsportsmanlike Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation presented by Dr. Pepper. It's not college football season without the delicious taste of an ice-cold Dr. Pepper, the ones fans deserve. Who is that next franchise, NBA, NHL, NFL, Major League Baseball, to win a title for the first time? I feel like if we would have done this last year, if the same exact situation happened a year ago, I feel like the Buffalo Bills would have been the first pick off the board.
Really?
Yeah. Why do you think that?
Wow, okay.
Because I think the Bills' window it felt different a year ago than it does now.
That's fair.
The window felt very open a year ago. Now it feels like I don't have as much breeze coming in now. I'm kind of warm.
I don't know if I felt that way about the Bills, because you're still talking about the Bengals coming off of a Super Bowl win in 2022. Super Bowl appearance in 2022.
Yeah.
And then you had Pat Mahomes in that same conference. When you look at the Bills' path to get there, you've got to go through Mahomes. You've got to go through Burrow. I just felt like the Buffalo Bills' degree of difficulty was going to be too high in order for Josh Allen to actually break through. I get it. You're talking about a team that had a top five offense and defense for the last several seasons, but just knowing that Josh Allen was going to have to beat Joe Burrow and Pat Mahomes, two guys that we've seen in consecutive conference championships, I don't know, it felt like a bit of a long shot to me.
So here are the teams in the NFL specifically that have never won a championship, okay? Super Bowl, I should say. Arizona, Atlanta, Buffalo, Carolina, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Detroit, Houston, Jacksonville, the Chargers, the Vikings, and the Titans. So let's rank Jacksonville and Cincinnati 1 and 2. Who's third on that list that you have confidence in as a first-time winner, Texas Rangers style?
Detroit.
Detroit above Buffalo, okay?
Yeah.
Am I wrong in picking Detroit next?
No.
I mean, the only other one would be Cleveland, I would think, right? If you think that they can get anything at the quarterback position.
And I don't have faith in that.
I don't have faith in Cleveland.
I have way more faith in Detroit than I do in Cleveland.
I mean, Smalls, you were talking about the Detroit Lions and wanting to root for that fan base. I mean, you have to, at this point, feel for the Cleveland Browns fan, don't you?
Oh, man. I think they're the best fans in the NFL.
I want to feel for the Cleveland Browns fan.
I want to pour them a drink and say, right? I'm sorry.
Right? $230 million guaranteed for a quarterback, and yet you're still one quarterback away.
Do you realize what they have endured? And they have stayed with this team. The Browns fans
are unbelievable. They're so loyal.
The team left them. They come back. They never actually – the amount of number one picks they've had, the amount of wrong coaches they've hired, the amount of bad quarterbacks that have played for them, the amount of off-field controversies they've had, and they never – waver. Their support is always there for that franchise. So, yes, if we're rooting for the Lions as a first-time winner, Texas Rangers style, you better be rooting for the Cleveland Browns, because that fan base, I'd argue, better than any fan base in the entire NFL.
You just made me think of the juxtaposition. So the Browns fans didn't walk away, yet the Detroit Lions organization made two all-time great players walk away while they were still in their prime, and Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson. Two players decided, you know what? I am done with football if that means I got to keep playing for the Detroit Lions.
I've had enough. I can't handle it anymore.
The Browns fans are so loyal, they would have blamed Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson. You don't want to be with us? We got this still. Well, not really, but they are so unbelievably loyal.
Oh, my gosh.
Jay Billis is going to join us in just a few minutes. Had a lengthy relationship with the late, great Bob Knight. We are going to talk to Jay Billis in studio in just a couple of minutes. But first, CC has this from Granger.
For the ones who get it done, Granger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgranger.com or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done. For the ones who get it done, Granger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgranger.com or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
We are Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance, ESPNU, ESPN App, SiriusXM, Channel 80, and all of our great ESPN stations across the country. Jay Billis is going to join us in just a couple of minutes, talk about the passing of Hall of Fame basketball coach Bob Knight, who passed away yesterday at the age of 83, and of course, three-time champion. And we're gonna get Jay in here. Come on in. We're on the air. It doesn't matter. Just come on in here. We have fun around here. You can just walk through the shot. Who cares? Doesn't matter for us.
Oh, he's a house guest. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
this is his first time.
This
is his first time in the house.
First time in. So yeah, Jay, thank you so much. Jay Billis, ESPN college basketball analyst. Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen, with you. You wrote a brilliant piece today on ESPN.com about the passing of Coach Knight. It felt, in reading it, therapeutic. It felt like going to actual therapy and understanding human relationships. Why did you feel forever like you needed to defend your friendship with Coach Knight?
Well, because it was questioned, and rightfully so. I mean, there were as brilliant a person and as huge a personality as he was, his flaws were bigger than life as well. And there were reasons not to care for Bob Knight. So I never argued with friends of mine who didn't care for him. The only problem I ever had with my friends who felt that way was if they questioned why I did. And he's the only friendship I really ever had to explain to people, if that makes any sense. And 20 years ago, I actually wrote an article on it. I just decided I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to stop explaining it. If someone doesn't care for him, that's their decision. But I do. And it's not that I excused or rationalized things that he did or said that I didn't agree with, because I didn't. And we actually talked about it. I felt that the good outweighed the bad, if that makes sense. And I don't know, you know, I don't know that the article I wrote about him was necessarily therapeutic for me.
No, I was saying for me.
Okay. Well, I don't think I should be trusted as any sort of therapist. but he was an amazing person. And the fact that his flaws were as big as life, he was such a brilliant coach and brilliant person. And, you know, like, I'm older than all of you, maybe all of you combined. But when in the 70s and 80s, there was nobody bigger in basketball at any level than Bob Knight. And when we would go and play golf, you know, we played golf, you know, different spots around the world. Everybody knew who he was. It was unbelievable. And when people would come up to him, he was always very kind. As long as they treated him well, he treated them well. And, you know, I got a million stories. I'm sure other people have more than I do. But he was an American original. And as important an American sports figure as there's been in my lifetime.
Jay, in your article, you said you had the belief that Coach Knight would have been as good a coach in other sports as he was in basketball. What were some of the characteristics that would lead you down that road in terms of his ability, his effectiveness to be a great communicator in sport?
Yeah, Chris, he had an incredible ability to dissect things. So in basketball, I would watch film with him. And, you know, I think I know a little bit about the game. I'm not putting myself up with great coaches or anything. But he would point things out that I think even other great coaches would go, well, geez, I didn't notice that. Mm. Like he had an incredible acumen for the game. And he did that with other sports. You know, if I watched I went to football games or a couple of football games with him, and he would point out things in the game. You're going, oh, geez, that's kind of next level. And he used to say about Doc Councilman, who was a great swimming coach at the University of Indiana, that Doc Councilman could coach any sport and be great. And I feel that way about Bob Knight, that he could have coached any sport. He knew baseball backwards and forwards. You know, he was an avid reader and always reading a book, and rarely, if ever, was the book about basketball. It was always about something else. And great companion, great conversationalist. He was an unbelievable presence. I've never been around a presence quite like that, where when he came into the room, the biggest presence in the room before him all of a sudden became much smaller. Yeah. Because he took up so much space in the room.
Jay, you said you have a million stories about Coach Knight. Can you share one with us that really exemplifies the coach that you knew, the person that you knew?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them are funny. you know, he was he was wonderful to eat with, because he knew every hole in the wall that you could ever want to eat at. And they were all cheap, and the stuff he drank, I couldn't believe. Like, he wasn't a drinker, but he would put like lemonade and Dr. Pepper together.
Oh.
And, you know, chocolate milk and soda. It was just bizarre. The other thing was driving with him. I didn't think he was a particularly good driver, but at least with me, he never wore a seatbelt. So the seatbelt chime would be dinging the whole ride.
It was
a form of torture that I think would have made anyone in enhanced interrogation. Everybody would sing and tell everybody everything they knew in order to get that to stop. And I was like, will you put that damn seatbelt on? Like, this is killing me. And he wouldn't do it. I think he enjoyed the fact that it bothered people.
It's Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio. Jay Billis joining us. Of course, ESPN college basketball analyst, talking about the passing of his friend Bob Knight, one of the great coaches ever. I always said from my whole childhood watching college basketball that I would send – this was before I had kids – I would send my kid to go play for Bob Knight because I knew exactly what I was going to get. My kid would work hard, be disciplined, graduate, and have a job after college. You work in a sport that I feel like has so much variance. You have no idea what's really going on with some of these programs. Bob Knight, I always felt like you knew exactly what was going on. Is that a fair assessment?
I think overall, and look, there were things that he did in practice that would be totally unacceptable now. They were unacceptable then, frankly. Mm. But overall, like, his players revered him. It was he could be difficult to play for at times, but I think if you ask any one of his players, I'm not sure it goes to every one of his players. I shouldn't say that, but most of his players would come on the side of reverence that what he did for them far outweighed any difficulty, and you had Indiana players that would tell the younger guys, don't listen to how he's saying it. Just listen to what he's saying. And because it was difficult to process that. When he got mad, and he did from time to time, you felt it.
Yeah.
And so I know there were difficulties, but I played for a guy who played for him. You know, I played for Coach K, who played for him at Army. And you know, there were similarities between the two. But I think Coach K had all of Knight's best qualities and precious few of his lesser qualities, like maybe none. I don't know exactly how to respond to that. Like, there are certain things he did that you can't justify, and I will not try to. But I go back to kind of the good outweighs the bad, and I think that goes for his players too.
Joe, you talked about how in the 70s and 80s there was no coach in college basketball that was bigger than Bobby Knight. What is his lasting impact in terms of growing the game of college basketball as we know it today?
Just basketball, period. I think he was the – in the 70s and 80s, for certain, there was no one more respected in his judgment or opinion about the game. Like, people went to Bob Knight to find out, what do you think about this? He was an innovator. He was the one, along with Pete Newell, who developed the motion offense. When he was at Army, they ran reverse action, which is kind of like a flex-type offense, and he championed and brought in motion. His defense was taught, you know, the ball you man concept, even though that I think that was started with Al Labalbo. He brought that forward. That was a huge factor. Everybody studied the way Knight did it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when in 1984, after Knight had coached the Olympic team, Stu Inman, who was the GM of the Portland Trailblazers and a brilliant basketball mind, called Bob Knight. They had the second pick in the draft, and everybody knew Houston was going to take Hakeem Olajuwon number one, and said, you know, what do you think? And he said, you take Jordan. He's the best player. He said, well, we really need a center. And Knight was like, then play Jordan at center. And, you know, he identified Jordan, he says, the best player I've ever seen when he was a junior in college.
Wow. That clip that's going around is unbelievable, because this is a guy that did not work in hyperbole for specific individual players. Think Belichick, Parcells. I mean, you played for Parcells, who coached for Knight, and he did that with one guy. The way he did that with Jordan is unbelievable.
Yeah, and he and Parcells were great friends. Yeah. So Parcells was an assistant at West Point under Red Blake when Knight was the head coach at Army. And they're great. Knight and Parcells have some amazing stories. There was a game that Parcells went to on the road, an Army game, and as Army was leaving the floor, somebody in the crowd was doing something, and Parcells got in a fight and punched a guy. And went into the Army locker room and told Knight, he goes, I got a problem. He goes, I hit a guy out there. And the police, the story that was told to me by both Parcells and Knight, said the police were coming for me. And Knight had their staff put him in one of their travel bags, and they snuck him out, zipped up in a bag. To get him out of there.
Oh, my God.
And when – this was years ago, but when Parcells was the coach of the Cowboys, Knight and Parcells had come up with this thing. They wanted to do an evening with Knight and Parcells. Knight had asked me, will you come in and kind of moderate the conversation? So I did. And they had a little VIP thing beforehand. And Parcells was in the room, and Knight had not gotten to the room yet. And Parcells, you know, his personality took up the room. Mm-hmm. And then when Knight came in, all of a sudden Parcells shrank and Knight was the, wow, the biggest deal. And it was kind of amazing, wow, for that's someone like me, yeah, who, yeah, didn't really know Parcells that well. But, you know, you could, it's one of those things you could feel.
Yeah.
And there were very few people I was ever around that didn't kind of defer to Knight when he was in the room.
You talked about Coach Knight's influence and how so many people would want an audience with him to try to replicate what he did. What specific threads were they trying to pull out of his approach to apply to what they were doing?
Just the consistent winning. You know, in 1975 and 1976, I'm going back way before your guys' time now, but they lost one game. Indiana lost one game those 2 years, and that was just at the end of John Wooden's run at UCLA, when he was the biggest deal in the game. And then it was Knight, and they were a Scott May, you know, broken arm away from two straight years of undefeated. Mm. They lost one game to Kentucky. I think it was in the Elite Eight in 1975. Otherwise, that team wins it all. And then the next year, they go 32-0 and win the whole thing, the last men's college basketball team to go undefeated in 1976. He was just an and he won with – it wasn't like he always had the top recruits. He always had great players, but it wasn't like he had the top recruits every year. He was just an amazing tactician, teacher. I've never seen anybody in practice get in and out of teaching situations with and make a point without stopping action like he did. Just brilliant.
Jay Billis, ESPN college basketball analyst. Just phenomenal stuff on the late Bob Knight. Again, more good than bad. I think that's a great way of saying it. Read his story, ESPN.com. We thank Jay for joining us. Coming up, Big Ten, we'll stay there. Coaches want Michigan punished. We'll get to that next on Sportsmanlike ESPN Radio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
You know, we sat here yesterday and we said the Michigan sign stealing situation is only going to get bigger because of what you just heard with Jim McElwain, the head coach of Central Michigan, that we didn't know who the sign stealing guy was on the sidelines or whatever. And we said this takes a whole different spin if it goes from a Big Ten / NCAA investigation to actually a police investigation for trespassing. It is on Sportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, ESPNU. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. So listen to these two updates from our two college football reporters here at ESPN, two of our many. But Pete Thamel, a college football insider, tweeted last night at Pete Thamel, on a Big Ten coaches call, a vast majority of the league's coaches encouraged Commissioner Tony Petitti to punish Michigan amid its NCAA sign-stealing investigation. Quote, collectively, the coaches want the Big Ten to act, end quote, per ESPN source. Then moments ago from ESPN's Adam Rittenberg, college football reporter. News from Pete last night, pressure is rising on first-year Commissioner Tony Petitti. As one source told me this morning, quote, he is going to have to act or he will lose the coaches and ADs, end quote. Now, here is where they're in the pickle, right? Mm-hmm. Tony Petitti is an unbelievably proven executive over the course of time, most notably from CBS, amongst other places. He comes in. It's his first year in the Big Ten. It's a big get to get Tony Petitti.
It's a big job.
Yes, it's a big job and a big get, both, because he is highly sought after. His first big issue is now with one of his two tiers of the conference or pillars of the conference, either Ohio State or Michigan. He's got this.
He's the best coach in the Big Ten.
Right. Yeah. He's with the best coach in the Big Ten. Good way of saying it. You want them to continue. You want them to be in the college football playoff. And all the other schools are complaining, likely because they're so good and they want him out. How do you handle this?
I don't think there is an easy way to handle it, but you follow where the evidence leads. And then ultimately, if it's a situation where Jim Harbaugh, by knowledge or I guess by a situation where he should have knowledge of it, is held accountable. That's what ultimately ends up happening. Now, I know that the Big Ten has already floated out there. Ignorance will not be used as an excuse. So even if he was unaware of the extent that Connor Stallions was going to in order to get that inside information and steal those signs, if he is involved and directly tied to the program, then that's on Jim Harbaugh. Like, he has to be responsible for everything that goes on, all of his subordinates. And if that ends up being Connor Stallions, then so be it. There has to be some level of accountability. I guess in this instance, though, the punishment has to fit the crime. And if he doesn't have direct knowledge of the level that this espionage went to with Connor Stallions, then I'm not sure that the NCAA is going to have the opportunity to be as heavy-handed as those in the Big Ten might want them to be.
So the punishment has to fit the crime, but I think in this instance, it's who's committing the act that is going to be held with the highest level of weight, I guess. Because yeah. I am a Big Ten girl. I went to the University of Illinois. If Illinois was stealing signs like this, do you think anyone would care?
No.
No one would care at all. These coaches, of course, they feel a certain type of way if they're thinking someone is in disguise on the sidelines stealing signs. But it's because Michigan is the best in the Big Ten and Jim Harbaugh is the best coach in the Big Ten. They're looking at, if we remove this guy from the equation, maybe we'll be better.
Yep.
You know, maybe we can use this as an excuse as to why we lost to Michigan. When it is a person and an organization that's having a lot of success, that carries more weight.
So that's the question, though. What's the crime? Is the crime the sign stealing or is the crime the winning?
It's both.
Because the Big Ten coaches on this conference call, according to reports, basically they had their whatever their regular meeting would be. I don't know why they were meeting specifically. And then Harbaugh get off of the call. They're like, okay, you're out, right? So now we need – because, hey, we're going to let you know, Smalls, we're about to talk about you. We need you to leave so CeCe and I can talk about you. That's what they did reportedly on this call.
Yeah.
But as you just said, if this was Brett Bielema in Illinois – are they asking Bielema to get off the call to try to get him out? They want him in if you're going to lose this much. So what the answer to the question is, we don't know yet what if it really happened because they're still investigating. If you're Tony Petitti, I think the number one thing you have to do now is delay. Figure out any way possible of delay till after the season. Then get into Harbaugh's ear and say, get the hell out of here. Go to the NFL because I'm about to come down on your program. I have to. You're never allowed back in the Big Ten, basically. We're banning whatever it may be. They don't want to cut off their nose despite their face.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop the NCAA from issuing some kind of sanctions toward Jim Harbaugh and the NCAA. And that's where it gets sticky for Jim Harbaugh if he is going to leave college and go to the NFL, because it sounds like Roger Goodell and the NFL have plans to uphold whatever disciplinary action that the NCAA may levy.
Which we all agree is absurd, right?
If in fact... Yeah. That he is culpable in what's been going on with this sign-stealing scandal. Again, I understand that ignorance is not an excuse, and the NFL adopted that same policy with Sean Payton and Bountygate. So, I mean, this is a situation where the NFL has shown we're willing to abide by that standard, that burden of proof, even if you don't know about it. If it was going on inside your program and you're the one in charge, you are going to be held accountable. So I think that becomes an interesting layer for Jim Harbaugh in terms of how he can, you know, find his way around any potential discipline that he may face as a result of this. But this is an ugly situation for a Big Ten. And just talking about the state of the conference and where they want to go, not just what Michigan means for the Big Ten, but also what the Big Ten is trying to do in terms of growing the conference expansion, USC and UCLA coming over next year. Like, this is a very delicate time for the conference. And right now, this is the headline. Not what's going on the field, but what's going on around the Michigan program with the sign-stealing scandal and one of the most prominent coaches in all of college football in Jim Harbaugh at the heart of it.
And let's also be clear, as I know you've said and you've said, these are accusations. There's no confirmation. We think that may or may not be Connor Stallions on the sidelines of the Central Michigan State game. We don't know.
But there's enough smoke around it, and that's the damage for Jim Harbaugh's reputation, right? Not he's coming off of the NCAA recruiting violations investigation. And here's the thing. There was something there because Jim Harbaugh in University of Michigan, their AD Ward Emanuel, had a self-imposed 3-game suspension. Mm-hmm. So there was something there. It's just that Jim Harbaugh didn't want to sit out as long as the NCAA wanted him to. So you had that. Now you have this sign-stealing scandal on the heels of that with Connor Stallions, who may have or may have not overstepped what he was asked to do by the program. It's a situation now where there's enough smoke that people are acknowledging there's a fire going on, and Jim Harbaugh might have been the one that said it. And if so, then he has to be punished.
As this continues to compound and this goes from a simmer to a boil, do we think there's any way Jim Harbaugh survives this at Michigan? Do we think it's just an inevitability that he ends up going back to the NFL?
He feels so different that if we were to sit here and say everyone else would Pete Carroll it, and just say, all right, peace out, USC. I'm going to Seattle. Harbaugh seems defiant at times where he's like, nah, I'm going to stay, actually, and I'm going to beat this. I'm going to go against this, where everyone thinks I'm going to run to the Bears or to the Chargers or whomever we want to throw out, mm-hmm. the Raiders. He feels like the kind of guy that would stay through this, oddly enough. But again, I want to go back to this. There's a gray area right now because the Big Ten coaches want him punished. Punished for what? You need proof to punish.
But I guess that's the, well
they
here's
feel
the thing.
Like they have enough.
If Connor Stallions is an employee.
If that's really him, then yes.
Yeah, if that's really him and he's working for the University of Michigan football program, then Harbs is going to be punished. But I guess the whole question comes down to what happens with this program moving forward. Because there are some that are viewing it, oh, Michigan's not on the up and up. They're cheating. That's why they're having a success.
Right.
There's some that are going to say that. And then there are other people that are saying, no, they're just better than everybody.
It's like the Houston Astros.
How this plays with the prep players, the guys that they're recruiting, other players that might be in the college football landscape that'd be willing to transfer to Michigan, I think that goes a long way to how the university itself handles whatever the NCAA and the Big Ten might dole out to Jim Harbaugh in the way of punishment. So I think that's also an interesting caveat to all of this. How is this perceived amongst the players that Michigan is trying to recruit? Does it become an us against the world mentality? Is this the, everybody is out to get Jim Harbaugh mm-hmm. because he's that good? If so, I want to come be a part of that. What they might not be thinking about and what could be an unintended consequence of all of this is the publicity that the University of Michigan football program is getting, because they're a damn good football team that's been cruising through the regular season because they're head and shoulders better than everybody else in the Big Ten.
Coming up, I'm for it on Sportsmanlike ESPN Radio. We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It is time now for I'm For It, a little positive programming, stories from in and around sports to make you smile with Smalls. What do you have, Smalls?
All right. First of all, shout out to the Texas Rangers for winning the World Series last night. Positive programming. It's a good day in Texas today. Corey Seager was the MVP of the World Series last night. Second time that he wins the MVP of the World Series in his career. But guys, come on. We know who the real MVP of this World
Who's
Series
that?
It's Creed. The band Creed. And here is the Texas Rangers celebrating last night to the tunes of the band that helped them get to this point, their rallying cry throughout the postseason.
Celebrates like this, and this is a special moment.
They're all singing in unison. They're rocking out to Creed. How many times have we seen this happen where it's a phrase or it's a song or it's a band that gets a team to the promised land?
I love that. I love the fact that Creed, as random as it may seem, is a part of their soundtrack for winning a championship. And I contend that every championship team has a soundtrack. For us in 2011 with the New York Giants, it was the Rick Ross, Rich Forever mixtape. Shout out, Stay Scheming. But it was a situation where it was nice to see guys bond. Having been there, having done that, got the T-shirt. It's really cool to relive that through another team, especially for the Rangers, a franchise where they're getting their first championship ever. That's really, really dope.
That has to make Pat Costello, our producer and Phillies fan, annoyed because they had the best song and the best dance and everything, and they didn't win. Yeah, Smalls, what else?
Well, hold on. Do we think Creed gets a ring?
No.
Should they get some sort of shout-out?
They should be invited to the parade. Exactly. Perform at the parade, no doubt about it. Yeah.
And, okay, another proposition here. So two of the greatest championships I saw in my St. Louis fandom was 2011, the St. Louis Cardinals. They had the rallying cry, Happy Flight, that helped propel them to come from 10.5 games back and win the World Series. And the St. Louis Blues, when they won for the first time in franchise history a Stanley Cup, they had Gloria by Laura Branigan. We have a lot of data points here that getting a song or a phrase leads to success. So we need one here on this show.
Okay,
we'll
work on that. We'll figure that out. But I think one of the other things that we got to point out about having your own soundtrack is that it has to be yours, uniquely yours, your original one. The Minnesota Vikings tried that same thing with Creed. It ain't work out for Kirk Cousins so much. So I'm just saying, you got to come up with your own that hasn't been or isn't anybody else's currently.
I mean, guys, we had one.
What with Brock Purdy?
Brock Purdy.
Yeah, it didn't really work out.
But that was specific to him, not necessarily about us, right?
Yes. We'll figure that out. We'll figure it out.
Okay, we're going to marinate
We'll figure
on
it
this.
Out. We'll workshop it. It's fluid, as Stephen A. says. It's fluid.
Well,
fluid.
Let's keep it going. You know, a lot of people were very excited about the Texas Rangers winning last night, including the commissioner of Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred, who got a little choked up, maybe? As he was presenting the trophy last night, here's what it looked and sounded like.
63 years is a long time to wait, but the Texas Rangers are World Series champions. It's my distinct pleasure to present the commissioner's trophy to Ray Davis, Neil Liebman, and Chris Young.
The voice going through it a little bit for the commish last night.
Again, I'm blaming Pat Costello. I'm going to tell you why. Pat's back. And that happens. Pat is the producer of Phlegm. That Pat has produced.
Producer of Phlegm.
Yep. Pat has produced our show, obviously. I have spoken with a tremendous amount of Phlegm. Then all of a sudden, he does a fill-in show on the weekends, and Aaron Goldhammer comes on the air with Pat, has an enormous amount of Phlegm. Then Manfred. That I believe that this is all tied to Pat Costello, the producer of Phlegm. But that is not the worst commissioner moment ever. The former commissioner of Major League Baseball, Bud Selig, has a famous moment where he says MVP. When he hands out an MVP, he calls it a MVP. That's worse than that. That was bad, but not a MVP like Bud Selig once said.
Pat, do you want to respond to Evan's accusations before we move on?
Yeah, clear your throat before you turn your mic on.
Right?
As someone that loses their voice a lot, though, I have a lot of empathy for him because sometimes it happens at the very worst times. It's a delicate instrument, the voice. And he's probably talking a lot to people. He's probably cheering. There's some strain on the vocal cords there. I feel badly for Rob Manfred.
I just don't understand why he was so choked up. I don't get it. It wasn't with them shooting in the gym, cuz. Why are you so choked up? I don't get it.
Have you ever lost your voice, though, at an inopportune time?
Yeah, on this show.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I do that all the time.
Absolutely. But in that moment, though, I mean, you have one job, Rob Manfred. One job. Take the commissioner's trophy, pass it to the owner. That's the only job you have. Why are you so choked up about it, bro?
Oh, I hear an from Pat. What's going on there?
Why are you so choked up?
Because of the owner getting it first?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. A carryover.
Terrible.
Okay, last one, guys. So the Miami Dolphins and the Kansas City Chiefs going head-to-head this Sunday. And Jalen Waddle was asked about the possibility of Taylor Swift being in the house for the Chiefs-Dolphins game. And he revealed that he's a Swiftie. What do you guys make of that?
That he's like everyone else.
But can you say that, though, about your opposition? Because she's part of the opposition.
Oh, I understand.
Is she really, though?
Yeah, she's Travis Kelce performing a lot better when Taylor Swift is in the house. They're winning games when Taylor Swift is in the house. Is this somehow giving shine to your opposition by saying, yeah, I'm a Swiftie,
So you're saying if you're playing against a team in any sport and the person has a famous significant other and you're a fan of that person, you cannot actually display your affection for that person game week.
I'm wondering. I love that he's a Swiftie, but I'm just wondering your guys' takes on it.
So if you're,
I don't know if Kevin Garnett would agree with that take, but that's neither here nor there. It's kind of like this, though, Smalls. It's like if you're playing against a player that has a signature shoe and you're wearing the signature shoe, it's almost like a little psychological advantage. So I see where you're going.
You know
I see where Jalen Waddle and the Miami Dolphins are going with that one. I get you. I get it. I understand it.
Think about the psychological advantage based on that logic that Michael Jordan had every game he ever played. What do you think? The opposition never was wearing J's? I mean, my God. Everybody's
wearing
Jordans.
Well, it felt like Michael Jordan dominated everybody he played against, so maybe.
Because he did.
Maybe those guys wearing J's probably wasn't a great thing for them to do.
The best of the stories of, like, MJ, like, the night before keeping these guys out on the opposition till all hours of the night, and they're like, oh, Michael's asking me to hang out. Of course I'm going to do that. And they're a mess the next day, and he played 18 before they even woke up. And he was out with them all night long.
He's just so unique, one of one.
Yes, that is for sure. There was a kid walking around the neighborhood with a LeBron jersey the other day for Halloween, and I said to the dad, you couldn't get a Michael jersey? I don't understand. Ooh. Like, I'm actually mad when people do that, and they don't wear the Michael jerseys. Or they have LeBron shoes and not the Michael stuff. Yeah, it gets me bothered. That's how much
for
I love Michael
Jordan. For a kid? Right on Halloween?
I don't care. Wear the Jordans.
Okay,
wear
so you're going to say that CeCe hates kids. You're going to say that I have an issue with elderly people.
You do.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
I have an issue with bad ownership. There's a difference.
I'm with you on that one,
thank
tomorrow.
You. Yeah. But you're the one that is talking trash to a kid on Halloween for his costume choice.
No, I said to the dad.
Right, well, to the dad
to
about
the, dad.
The kid.
Yeah, I'm allowed to do that.
Are you?
Yeah, well, I did.
How come you can be mean to kids, but we can't?
Exactly.
No, you can be mean to kids all you want. I'm just saying it's different when you have kids. You experience it totally differently.
So wearing LeBron's with a more Michael Jordan jersey, unacceptable, but your kids acting out in a restaurant in public, perfectly fine.
Agreed.
Got it.
Agreed.
Got it.
Okay. The Evan logic.
That is the Evan Cohen logic.
Okay, got it. We're there.
It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.